Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
So today on Fresnolandia, we have Doug Hoagland from the Monroe Review to discuss the latest in the Measure P saga. Welcome to the podcast, Doug.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Before we get started with Doug, I wanted Donnie to have an opportunity to remind us the origin story of Measure P, how it got started, what the hope was that it would accomplish for the city of Fresno. So Donnie, could you start us off by giving us the background and big picture about what the purpose of Measure P was?
Sure, and this is also going to serve as my disclosure for this episode. Measure P, for those of you who may not be familiar, is a 3/8 cent sales tax in the city of Fresno. And it was on the ballot in November of 2018. It supports parks and arts. I think a lot of people think more of Measure P as a parks tax, but it is also for the arts. And I was part of one of many people, many dozens of people in 2018 who helped put that together and co-authored the measure and was in a lot of the sort of gnashing of teeth conversations behind closed doors to figure out how to structure it, how to do it well, learned a lot of things along the way. And arts was not necessarily initially part of the Measure P conversation. I don't know if that's something that a lot of people know. It was initially really meant to focus on parks and to solve this park equity gap that we have and continue to have in Fresno around so many neighborhoods in South Fresno not having equitable access to parks or having well-maintained park space and green spaces. And there was I'm trying to remember exactly what the origins of the arts group coming into the fold, but I think there was a few people who were either on current boards of arts organizations in Fresno or had served recently arts donor community who said, hey, we heard that there's this park measure being built and we think that you should also consider including arts. And it was very controversial in the beginning. A lot of people were not supportive of mashing together parks and arts. If you put too many things together to voters, there can be a little bit of confusion and also what's the end outcome that we're supposed to get at the end of the day.
It's hard to sell something if there's a lot of different missions going on.
Absolutely. And so I think there was a lot of hesitance there. You have people from Tree Fresno and other sort of more green space oriented organizations that were just really skeptical. But ultimately, a merger of the arts and parks coalitions was found. And even early on, as that sort of group was trying to find its footing, there was a really clear debate over if we're going to put arts in a public tax, how much should really be spent just giving the arts organizations that are already existing, have been existing for a long time, sort of the legacy nonprofits like the Philharmonic, like Arte Americas, like the Fresno Art Museum, how much is just core operating support to make sure that they can exist in perpetuity as long as possible? And how much do you want to support emerging artists, cultural organizations that may not historically be seen as classical art, but are providing a cultural experience to residents in Fresno, and especially residents that may not have the wealth and resources to enjoy the other performing arts. So that was a big fight in early Measure P. And as Doug's reporting has borne out, we are still fighting a lot of those battles, and we'll go into the details on that. But ultimately, there was a sort of a truce, so to speak, in the ballot measure crafting process where the different sort of camps around how much do we support legacy arts, how much do we support emerging artists, how much do we support cultural organizations. The truce was, let's build an arts plan so that we have a more public process, because the whatever 10, 12 people who are crafting this measure do not represent the entirety of the city of Fresno on this issue. And so we ended up getting an arts plan out of it. So that's my involvement. I stepped out of Measure P in March of 2018 and then went into journalism after that. And so I haven't really looked back. And now I'm totally on the outside of these debates. And it's fascinating to watch how things have progressed and sometimes not progressed in the last 7 years.
Yeah, Doug, that's a perfect transition point. I want to, if you could, give us an overview of the implementation process. And if you could, just highlight, Donnie already gestured towards this, but highlight some of the implementation challenges that they've encountered, both in areas of transparency, but also in the equity questions that she broached as well.
Sure. So to begin with, this is the second year for the arts grants. So I think the question becomes, what's a normal set of bumps along the road in terms of implementation? And then what is a serious problem that needs to be addressed? So in terms of implementation, this year, a group of what we would call the emerging artists, many of them individual artists, some of them representing smaller arts organizations, came forward pretty late in the process and said, we feel like there's problems of bias and problems of transparency. And they appeared at several meetings of the Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission, which is this 9-member group set up by Measure P that really administers, oversees Measure P. Those 9 members are appointed by the mayor. And there is a, it isn't the same people that are on there now that started out, but they're 9 people. So as the, what I would call, I call the grassroots artists slash critics, because they really did become critics of the process, came forward and asked the PRAC, the public, the Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission, to address those issues.
Can you flesh out what they say exactly? Are they issues or what they point to in terms of bias?
Yes. This year, and boy, we're getting into the weeds here. Do you want to go there?
Let's go into the weeds.
Okay. Here we go. The Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission has a subcommittee called the Cultural Arts Subcommittee. They take the scores that come from the community volunteers who look at the applications, use a rubric, and score the applications. There was $6.3 million available this year. One of the tensions was last year in 24, which was the first year, there was about $9.4 million available. The reason there was more money available last year, while they worked out the court battle over Measure P, money began to accumulate, so there was more money available last year.
So being in the 6 to 7 is more reasonable going forward.
What they think, what they say is there'll be $5 million available every year. But
okay.
The tension this year was that there was less money and more applicants.
Got it.
Gotcha.
And so you have a public call for artists, and then you have a group of volunteers who basically is tasked with scoring these applications.
Yes.
And that's all done privately.
Yes, but here became the rub in terms of transparency.
Okay.
The Fresno Arts Council, which has a contract with the city to administer the grants program, calls for the volunteers, works out that process. In 24, all that work was done behind closed doors. In 25, what the Arts Council asked the volunteers to score applications, and then groups of these volunteer scorers came together in a public meeting that where they discussed their scores, and the applicants could attend those meetings. Now, there were allegations that the Arts Council recorded those interviews or recorded those sessions, but the applicants who were in the audience could not. So there was the issue of how much transparency is there where you're recording, and then when we ask you for the tapes or the recordings, you won't give them to us. So that was the issue of transparency.
And then there was a second issue, if I recall, around this cultural arts subcommittee who is tasked to, so I'm clear, they're tasked with taking this volunteer scores and then deciding amongst the scores who ultimately gets funded?
No, I don't think that was exactly the way it was. Okay. The subcommittee, as best as I can understand, took the scores and basically passed them on to the Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission. The key decision was made earlier in the process that depending on what score you got, you were either going to get 90, 60, or 30% of what you had applied for. Now, another one of the tensions that came this year was that in 24, people got a much higher percentage of what they asked for.
Got it. Because there was more money. I see. And there was also some consternation around this subcommittee not being public.
Yes.
Could you explain that a little bit?
I'll try. Yes, those meetings were not public. At the end of the 24 process, some members of the PRAC, which I'll use as shorthand for the Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission,
sure,
had a discussion at one of their public meetings about can we meet in public? I think there was a sentiment amongst at least some of the PRAC members that they felt like that would be a good thing. I was at that meeting. I've gone back and watched the recording of that meeting. And what happened was that city officials, both from the Parks Department and the city attorney's office, raised a number of concerns about it, including how much would it cost for security if we have to have a meeting. And ultimately, they decided not to have those meetings be public. And then this year, people the critics said this meeting should be public.
And just so our listeners are clear, the city of Fresno is in active litigation
yes.
with the First Amendment Coalition and the ACLU, in part because of a Fresnoland investigation, over whether their subcommittees should be made public and subject to the Brown Act, which is California's transparency laws.
Yeah, can we go jump back real quick? Because you mentioned that the scores led to selection. So what? How does the subcommittee function in this universe? I'm still not clear on that.
And I'm going to be honest, I'm not 100% sure either. And, and that's a very good question, and I think there needs to be greater clarity on that.
Got it.
As I best understand it, the key work that the subcommittee does in conjunction, and they worked with Lilia Gonzalez-Chavez, executive director of the Fresno Arts Council, was even before the scores arrived from the community volunteers who did the scoring, they had set up a criteria of if you, and the scores were 1 to 6.
So they set up the rubric, kind of. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but they also set up the percentages, which was the key determinative factor of how much money you were going to get.
Okay. Let's jump to bias now, because that's another accusation. So can you flesh out what that claim is and what evidence we have to support that?
I'll try.
Okay.
We go back to the recordings that the Fresno Arts Council made at these sessions where the scores were discussing how they scored and the applicants could be there but not say anything. So there are accusations that members of the Fresno Arts Council staff injected themselves into those discussions, sometimes boosting a applicant, sometimes not boosting an applicant, providing information that was not in the grant applications that could conceivably, according to the critics, have influenced the scores. Because at those discussions, the scores were allowed to adjust their scores.
Oh. Okay.
So there were these, again, the accusations of bias are that members of the Fresno Arts Council staff injected themselves into those conversations, pro and con.
Okay. There's a quotation from your article that I want to read, and
sure.
I would love for you to interpret it for us. It's from the director of the Fresno Arts Council, Lilia Gonzalez-Chavez. And the quote is, quote, "The arts and culture community is also ever evolving, so we should expect to evolve our process with it and adjust to needed changes," end quote. How do you interpret what she is referring to there and what it says about this process?
Well, a disclaimer, obviously, I can't get inside her head.
Of course.
I can't ask her exactly what every quote means.
Yeah, why'd you include it in your article? Why'd you feel
sure.
it's important?
I think it could mean two things. One, the sense that I think at the Arts Council and members of the PRAC do want to listen, according to their own statements, to some of the concerns that were raised by the critics. So in that regard, they see this as an evolving process. In terms of recording the conversations, which became this huge issue and whether they would be released or not, Lilia has said publicly the jury is still out on whether they will do that again next year. If you'd like my own personal feeling, just looking at it as an observer, I think once you've let that horse out of the barn, it's difficult to put it back in.
True.
Once you've let recordings be made, I think people would say, you did it last year, why not this year?
Do you think that will, and this is obviously a question from your perspective, do you think that will improve the process, having those recordings?
I don't see how it could hurt. I don't see how it could hurt for people to go back and review, and if they had some concerns, be able to listen to what was said, especially if they weren't able to take notes.
Yeah, yeah. There's another quotation I wanted to pull from your article before we have a broader discussion. It was from Hugo Morales. He was talking about emerging applicants, and the quote is, "Emerging applicants with projects," and this is where you start to quote him, "did not have the same odds of success, which is unfair, especially in considering these are relatively small groups, many using fiscal sponsors, and already on an uneven playing field in terms of staff capacity for writing proposals."
And Hugo, for our listeners, is the founder and executive director of Radio Bilingue and a MacArthur genius.
Okay. So what do we make of his statement? Because I think he's broaching the kind of the bias subject here again. What do you see him as pointing to there?
I think he was referring to two things. One, there were four grant categories, and the grant category that had the most applicants was this emerging organization / individual artists doing specific projects and seeking support. So there were 114 of those applications that came in, the largest number and original, and they received the smallest amount of money. Now, when there was some adjustments made, they did end up giving a little bit more money in that category, but I think he felt like it was inequitable. And also, again, individual artists or a smaller organization don't have the staff, don't have people with experience in grant writing. And I think that maybe there was a feeling that lack of expertise impacted the scores they received.
This raises a broader question here, just about not-for-profit sectors, grant writing. Is this really just a discussion about the inherent inequities to the grant writing system, the proposal system, arts funding, that if you have a larger organization with a bigger staff, that you're always going to have an advantage? Is this what we're actually talking about here, or something specific to Measure P?
You're tossing the hard one at me.
Yeah.
And I think that's been something I've been trying to understand too, is there's a lot of these claims around transparency and bias, and I'm glad that the PRAC is taking at least the transparency accusation seriously, and their subcommittee has now been made public and subject to the Brown Act, which is a step in the right direction. But in my experience, I feel like transparency is the means to an end for most people. It's mm-hmm. let us in the door so that we can see more of the process, so that we can provide more substantive feedback to that process. And it still goes back to this question of, are the critiques here really about process, or are they about the bigger question of who's getting the money?
I think they're about both.
Okay.
Because process leads to who gets the money.
Yes.
So I think there is a critique of both the process and then the end result of this year, $6.3 million available. Roughly $5 million of that money went to the established legacy organizations.
Got it.
About $1 million went to the emerging organizations / artists. So I think if you're from the viewpoint of the critics, process affected outcome.
That makes a lot of sense.
How do you look at this, Donnie, as being part of the origins and the initial creation of this, and then seeing these challenges now? Are you surprised by these challenges? Did you expect them coming in? And like, how do you see it from coming from a place of, I was there at the start and now I'm seeing what it looks like in practice?
I guess I am somewhat surprised. And Hugo, just so everyone is clear, was one of the people at the building table of Measure P behind closed doors crafting the measure, raising these very same issues. Mm-hmm. And so in some, we probably should have had Hugo on, maybe we can have him on at a later time to hear his perspective on this. I'm a little bit surprised that we're still having that very core conversation 7 years later. And maybe, Doug, you could help us answer the $5 million to establish compared to $1 million for emerging. How much of that was assumed to be a final outcome, or how much of that was discretionary within the most recent process that we just had? Because I was under the understanding that, like, if you're the Philharmonic or if you're Arte, you're in a completely different category. You're not competing against a muralist who might be working with Dolce up front or some other fiscal sponsor for the same amount of money.
You're correct in that. So the Philharmonic was not competing with the muralist. The muralist was not competing with the Fresno Art Museum. But I think part of the issue, was that in the guidelines, for instance, the larger legacy organizations could apply this year for up to $400,000.
Got it.
So even from the get-go, they were able, even nobody got $400,000, mm-hmm. but even if they got 60%, they were getting a pretty good chunk of change. And a smaller organization or an individual artist applying for less money, then according to this 30-60-90 split, mm-hmm. was always going to get less money.
Yeah, it's a per capita question, right, of your total
basically.
Budget.
Yeah.
No matter what way you... And so I'm surprised, Jordan, back to your earlier question, that we're still having these debates. I know that there's probably an argument that some of the emerging organizations are in a really tough time. Federal and state funding for the arts is getting pulled in a lot of places. I know Arte has lost a lot of grants that were federal. And so where do we go from here?
That's a great question, and I was just trying to think real fast when you were talking.
Yeah, yeah.
So I believe really the next step, and this will set the stage for next year, is that it is possible to update the guidelines for the arts grants once a year. And so as I understand it, and that goes to the City Council, I think after the first of the year, the Fresno Arts Council will be taking to the City Council a new set of guidelines. Now, I don't think they're going to start, they're not going to reinvent the wheel, but I think those kind of policy questions about are we dividing it in mm-hmm. half? If we have 5 million, are we giving 2.5 to emerging, 2.5 to established? Those kind of policy decisions, I think, could end up at the Fresno City Council should they choose to get into it.
Based on your reporting, how much have you seen council members wanting to help rewrite some of the rules? I know I've personally heard some rumblings that the council is not particularly happy with how things are playing out.
Can we talk later?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm just curious how much you think this could end up as more of a showdown at the council.
Another really good question. Can I go back to my origins and starting on Measure P, which might inform that question?
Yeah, sure. Please.
Donald Monroe, who is the publisher of the Monroe Review, this website that covers arts and culture in the community, asked me, I mean, we're colleagues and we're friends, and so in late 2022, he asked me to set the stage for what was going to be the beginning of the arts grant program. So I wrote this long story, and I contacted every city council member asking them for comment, except for Tyler Maxwell, who I live in his district, and I voted for him. So I was completely upfront in the article, but I didn't contact him. And my feeling at that time, based on the fact that many people didn't return my phone calls or my messages, indicated to me that they weren't interested in getting into this, because you end up saying, we're going to ask you to define art. And people do not, that's a political hot potato. But I will say, I think Miguel Arias has raised some questions in the past about this. So maybe there is a changing feeling on the council. I don't know. That's a good thing for me to explore. Do they want to get involved in this?
Yeah. And then we have dispersals coming up. That's the next thing on the horizon, correct?
The money going out the door.
Yes. They've said that will be November. Now, yes, and I'm sure that is obviously a great relief to the applicants that were successful. The only caveat is the money was supposed to be there July 1st. So you now have, we're basically 4 months late, and you have a year to do your project. So it's crunched the timetable for people who either are doing a project or built that money into their operating budget, and now it's just arriving.
So I want to go back to something you said when you first started answering some of our questions, Doug, which is that you were saying certain parts of this, how much of this is bumps in the road, typical setting up a new process, the city of Fresno has never done public arts grant making before, and how much of this is some systemic issues? What's your assessment on where we fall on that spectrum?
Can I split the difference? I know this may be a cop-out, but I think it's a bit of both. And I think in a way it's too early in a way to know for sure whether it's systemic. I think we'll have a better idea in 26 to see, are some of the issues that have been raised by the grassroots organizations and individuals, are they addressed? Is there greater transparency? As you said, I think the Cultural Arts Subcommittee, those meetings are going to be open. And I frankly think your reporting on the city's budget, secret budget committee hearings, this is just my own opinion, nothing, I have no reporting to base this on, but I can't help but think that the context for the trouble the city got into on that prompted them to say, okay, these subcommittee meetings can be open. So I think, again, let's see what happens in 26. Maybe another issue will be, okay, so the Fresno Arts Council recorded those meetings in 25 between the scores. Will they make those tapes available?
Yeah.
Is anybody listening to what the critics have said? They say they have. Let's see what the actions are.
Yeah, it feels like an illusion that you will reduce conflict about who gets art grants. It'll just something that'll be always with us. And I think actually in some ways it can be a good thing if you have robust debate about who gets art grants. And I don't think that should be the goal, to reduce conflict necessarily.
I don't think so either. It's more just how do we channel the conflict into productive spaces where the conflict can have some sort of resolution is the concern I have. And I know at some of the meetings that have happened over the last month, they've been really tense.
And personal at times.
Very personal, some personal attacks. Yeah. And so I think that's what's been hard to figure out, is there's obviously going to be high tensions. People's budgets are at stake. That's, as a person who runs a nonprofit, it's always very stressful. And I hope that there is space for an open process around the guidelines at the same time.
And we'll be looking forward to your future reporting on how this added transparency will affect the process going forward.
And I will say, so Dolce Up Front, who's been one of the main players in this, working with the emerging artists, they posted something on their Instagram account. I think it was last week. It was a story in KQED about how the city of San Francisco had paused their grant making around arts. And they were posting that, I think, to say that this is a much bigger than Fresno issue. And Doug, I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that as well.
I also saw that article, and I thought that was very interesting. There were calls late in the process for the PRAC to pause this. In fact, the Coalition for Fresno Arts, which Dulce was part of, held a press conference in late September and did ask for a pause. Then, of course, the tension became at subsequent meetings of the PRAC, people coming forward and saying, please release the money and let's try to make changes for next year. But as I saw that article from KQED, and it was interesting, and it seemed to buttress the idea that you could pause and make reforms in the middle of the process rather than waiting for another round to start.
We always close these podcasts in the same place with what we're loving this week. We're going to start with Donnie. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
Regulars will know I'm a big soccer mom. So I'm laughing because it's true. So I spent my entire weekend doing just that at a tournament in the Bay Area with my son's soccer team. And yeah, it was super fun. Just love being on soccer fields all day.
So how do you do?
They got second in the Boo Cup. Very exciting.
Wow. Boo Cup. Is there an actual Halloween cup that they get? Like some kind
They
of
got
trophy?
Medals.
Okay.
There was not an actual cup. Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. If there wasn't some dumb offsides call. There's always a dumb offsides call when it comes to soccer.
And it's always wrong.
Always wrong. The refs never get it right.
Doug, what are you loving this week?
If we can say the week started on Sunday,
sure.
My 6-year-old grandson from Sacramento, Max, FaceTimed me and wanted to show me a new Lego creation. And he's very much into Legos, and I'm very much into enjoying the fact that he's into Legos.
That's super fun.
Was he building some kind of structure, or is it of his own creation? What was he working on this week?
No, he gets sets. We help buy sets for him along with his mom and dad. And I'm going to sound like an overindulgent grandfather, but this kid is really smart and very mechanically oriented and builds these things very quickly.
Legos is such a weird world. I was in Southern California just randomly at a mall in Arcadia, and there was a Lego store in that mall, and they had set up like ropes like in a queue for a line to get in the store, and it was easily 100 people long, and I didn't realize this whole world of Lego. What are they waiting for? I guess I don't understand. Donnie, do your kids play with Legos?
Eliana does.
Okay.
Yeah, but she prefers to freeform it and not have the kits.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what I'm loving this week, I live in Fresno, which is, I guess, more of a Giants town because of, I guess, being 40 minutes closer to the Bay Area than L.A. It feels middle of the road to me. You see those houses in Southern California where it says we're a split household and it's got USC and UCLA on two flags.
House divided, yeah.
It seems like that could be Fresno, but that's not the case. It feels like it's overwhelmingly Giants fans, and I'm a stealth Dodgers fan, and I don't like to share it publicly, but here I am.
Shame.
I know. It is what it is. I was born in Southern California, grew up in Bakersfield, so I'm closer to that. So the Dodgers had quite quite a September and October. And then the last game they played was one of those games that will probably go down in history. Mm-hmm. Shohei Ohtani, this probably the best player in baseball, pitched 6 shutout innings with 10 strikeouts and then also hit home runs every time he touched a bat. It was Babe Ruth reminiscent mm-hmm. kind of game where it's just almost a perfect game by a player in every dimension. And that was just a lot of fun to watch live. And so I was relishing. I actually turned the game off at one point, and then because I thought he's not going to hit another one. And then I get a text message, and I turn it back on, and it's in the parking lot. And so that was just so much fun to watch. And sorry, Giants fans. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinum. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.